Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Welcome to Cockpit to Cowl, the show that explores general aviation safety topics from the combined perspective of flight instructors, pilots, and mechanics, exploring both pilot and aircraft topics to make aviation safer and more enjoyable. I'm Jeff Simon, pilot AMP/IA and president of Social Flight.
And I'm Brian Schiff, just a dumb old pilot in the CFI.
Man, you get me every time that you introduce yourself like that, because talk about like shooting low compared to all the things that I look to you for, my friend. Hey, we're going
to to set the bar low and fail to achieve.
Well, on tonight's show, we're talking temps, taming high temperatures, because it is getting warmer out there. Thank goodness for those of us here on the other side of things. Meaning up here in the north, where it's finally starting to warm up.
Yeah, south of the Mason-Dixon line, it's not so cool, or I can tell you that.
Well, so temps are rising, and that means that we've got to talk about how do you tame temps under the cow, how do you tame temps in the cockpit and inside the cabin, and how do you tame the temps going on in your head when you're dealing with high temp environment out there, which is, I think, really, really important to cover. So, Brian, I want to kick it off by asking you a little bit about, is there anything that you change? You're down in Dallas. Last time I was down there visiting with you and doing the show from down there, it was going to be 100 degrees the next day, the day I got out. And yeah. Is there anything you do different when you're flying on a hot day down there?
Oh, sure. I sweat. I mean, there are a lot of things you have to do differently. You need to dress for it, and you need to try to keep the airplane as cool as you can ahead of time. If you're unfortunate and don't have an airplane in a hangar and you have an airplane sitting outside, it's going to be pretty hot. I will be honest with you, Jeff. I have an airplane that does not have air conditioning. It actually has two, one on the left, one on the right, and we open them, and the big fan on the front. But if that's not enough, it's hot, and I'll be downright honest. I will not fly when it's that hot. We have a local flight school here that equipped every one of their airplanes with air conditioning. And I know you just did that, and I think you have a lot to say about that, but that's, I would only want to fly that. We have cars, almost every car out there has air conditioning. Why is it that airplanes, as a general rule, don't? I mean, I understand we got a weight problem, and then energy problem, and we're trying to conserve everywhere we can, but and then once we get up to altitude. So I will plan my flights to go high as I can. And sometimes I'm fooled by an inversion layer, and I get up there and I'm climbing and climbing, and doggone it, it's getting warmer and warmer and warmer. At the airline, we are fortunate enough to have good air conditioning, but a lot of times, you know, in the summer when everybody's flying, these aircraft get road hard, put away wet. And we'll get one without an APU. Auxiliary power unit. And for those who don't know what that is, it's like if you have a motor home, it's the generator that you can turn your air conditioning on when you run your generator. Well, so we don't have air conditioning on the ground when the engines aren't running. So we'll rely on airport air plugged into the airplane. And, sometimes the people on the ground, they plug in the air, and I'm no expert in fluid mechanics, but I know that I've played with a hose before, but they'll plug in this air hose and it's got a kink in it like you never seen, and the airplane gets really hot. And it's up to us to say, this far, no further, stop. We're not boarding until we get the aircraft cool. And so sometimes we'll have to delay flights, but we will consider passenger comfort first. You just can't get into a hot airplane. Heat stroke is a big problem for passengers and crew. So to combat that, we've got to keep it cool, get cooler air in it, block the sun, and keep hydrated. Those are the things as pilots that we can do. I know that I want to talk about something that we use, and almost every airline pilot has it now, is these Kinder Fluff things. They're expandable sunshades, and I'll show you a picture later, but they stick to the window. And you told me something very interesting about that. I'm using them on an airplane that has a glass windshield. These cut out a lot of heat. I mean, I mean, look. So they're worth their weight in gold. They're like $17 on Amazon, and I'll tell you where to get them. But you cautioned me about something like if you have an airplane with a plastic windshield or plexiglass, you don't want to put this on it, do you? Or can you?
Well, it gets that's a tough one to answer because to some degree the answer is like yes, you want to use shades if you can to keep things cool. Certainly when you're hey, 100% when you're on the ground. I happen to have the really big ones that don't have the sort of tacky side that you have on the Kinder shades.
Yeah.
You can use those to on the ground to do it, but the challenge that we have with our aircraft is that the windows, as you mentioned, are very prone to scratching. And
Yeah.
sometimes people think of that in terms of like an actual discrete scratch. We put something on there, we rub something, a scratch is left there. But in other cases, I've seen people put things on in the same place every time. And then just the vibration of being in place, when you take it off, you see it's got a wear mark over time, and you can see that kind of develop. Now, I'm going to be doing some testing on the Bonanza with Jet Shades. That's a company that makes some products out there. They have ways of spacing that away from the window, so I'll give you some feedback in the future on that. But the other thing
Here's
that's a bit of a
what my
challenge.
cockpit looked like the other day. Both of us had our, and we, it's funny, but it's not. It's a greenhouse up there, and we don't get the airflow, and we have all those windows. Like in the back, each they got little cabin windows they can close shades. We don't have that, but that's what we had. And just so you guys know, that's on Amazon, Kinder Fluff thing. They come in a little packet of four, and it's like 17 or $18. Totally worth it. I didn't mean to cut you off there, which I did, but I was going to show these pictures. So that's what we do.
And so that brings up the other thing, which is it hard to spot traffic through that?
Well, at this point, you're so hot that you don't care about traffic. I'm kidding. But we're sitting on the ground. So, yes, the safety point here is you take those down before you start taxiing, and then you start getting really hot. You want to get in the air as soon as you can, get up to altitude. And we don't use the dark ones in flight. But you can see on the lighter one here, you can kind of see through it to some extent. Actually, that's not even a lighter one. The lighter ones you can see through. But once we get up in class alpha, where there's a lot more separation and everybody should be IFR. With a few exceptions, so no one, don't send your corrections. We do need to still look out the window. The best part is to go get some IMC, get in the clouds and cool off.
And again, you just have to be responsible about this because I have seen people really black out the cockpit, at least on one side, at lower general aviation altitudes and joke about like flying under the hood
Yeah,
to
that's
do it. And
not a good
that's
idea.
all good until you get killed by someone, right, by traffic coming in. So it's a tough call to some degree. But if you are going to adhere something or be very, very careful that it is super clean, that it's not, there's no vibration against it. Like, just be really careful. I've seen the results of having that be an issue. Now, the other thing that you can do is to actually find a way to cool the cabin. And I know at Oshkosh, for you can always go around at AirVenture or at Sun and Fun, and you can see there's a number of companies that make like ice box coolers, which you put ice and a little bit of water in a cooler with a fan and a heat exchanging coil. And then there's people who make them themselves and put a little fan in. It's a really simple system at where you literally have like a heater coil you get used or new or whatever that you stick in the ice water, and then a couple hoses that come up to another coil that and just a pump, just like a fish tank pump that just pushes it around, and then you blow air through it. That's only as good as long as the ice lasts. And so you have to wait to the
Yeah, I was going to
ice.
say, I feel like that'd be 5 minutes here.
Yeah, it might not be that long.
Yeah.
And some people say it's a lot better than nothing. It gets you up to the air temp. It does, there's different things that can help. I did, as you mentioned, decide to splurge recently, and I agonized over making this investment in the plane for a long. I've been thinking about it forever, and they're very, the air conditioning systems being added to an aircraft of sort of factory STC or aftermarket STC air conditioning system is very expensive. For my aircraft, in the end, I decided to go with a system that is called ACE, from a company called AC Services in Tennessee. It's quite fantastic. You can show a couple pictures of it.
Yeah, I'll pull it up. I want to say, I see in the chat people talking about dry ice. Please don't use dry ice. I mean, you can asphyxiate yourself with the carbon monoxide.
And did someone acid. Literally say use
no,
dry
I just,
ice?
No, I don't see. I don't see what. I just see a dry ice in the conversation going on, and I don't. I just want to touch that. Like, we can literally in our cargo compartment only carry so much, because even in the cargo compartment it'll start giving off too much, so we're limited. Don't carry dry ice.
Let's not start promoting, you know, utter dangerous, ridiculous things.
Ice. Yeah, so watch out for that.
Yeah, so if you want to bring up a picture, I'll show you what I finally decided to make my kind of lifelong splurge on, and I saved up for a very long time to be able to do this.
And you got a hot air balloon?
Oh, yeah. So that was my home airport. First of all, temps are rising. Lots of cool things going on. I thought that was a cool shot.
It was so hot that they didn't even need to put the fire under the balloon?
Yes, exactly. At one point, it came in a lot lower than that. I was worried that that it was going to do a little touch and go on the Bonanza. But so push ahead on this. Yeah. And so the system I went with from AC Services down in Tennessee is really, they focus on Beechcraft. They may do other aircraft as well, though, and it's a very cool system because it replaces your heat system as well as your air. I mean, there is no air conditioning system before it, but it makes it all automated. It gives you that panel that you see below the engine controls there, a little panel. Where you can set it and forget it, just like
I was going to try to zoom in on that. I mean, can we?
Yeah, you can zoom in on that probably. I'll show you a few more things once we zoom in on that. It's totally automatic, and it's remarkable. So they add a piece. If you want to come in, yep, you can go to the next one there. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I was just gonna.
Perfect.
We're having technical difficulties, so forgive the PowerPoint prowess and why we're not in presentation mode. So
yeah,
anybody wanting to criticize that, that's, you know, we're just dealing with.
So if you raise that up just a tiny bit there, you'll see the little panel there. And
yeah.
It's just a really cool system. So I didn't know what to expect from this. As we go forward, I mean, I certainly researched it, but if you go forward, we'll see. They add in a new air vents above the pilot and co-pilot. They also add air vents towards the back. That little mesh area is a new speaker that's set up there. Move forward. We can see some more. A different venting system towards the back. And then if you can go through a couple more there, you can see how they build. They actually replace, one of the nice things is they replace the whole headliner, which on my plane, being a 50-year-old aircraft, was sagging all over the place. And so it was kind of cool to get that all updated. And then if you go to the next one, you'll see how they actually do it. They put a compressor on. This is a very traditional system, right? You just have a compressor up front, and it just runs the lines back, and everything else is in the tail. There's almost no change to the balance portion of your weight and balance. And the weight addition, I think, was about like 35 pounds. It was very reasonable in terms of what you've actually got to manage there. And so you can close those pictures. There's not much more to do on those. But here's, you talked about a temperature inversion. So
you
the
say close the pictures?
Yeah, we're good on those. So
okay,
the day after we did the show together, down there in your studio, which I loved, when I took off to go back, it was forecast to be up to 100 degrees that day, but it wasn't too hot early in the morning when we were there. It was like 69, 70 degrees, something like that on the ground. You mentioned temperature inversion.
Yeah.
I've experienced small temperature inversions. I had not experienced a major temperature inversion. And usually I'm thinking about temperature inversions in the winter up here, but maybe that's because we're always in winter up here. I kept climbing out of your airport down there, and it kept getting hotter outside. I got up to 7,000 feet and it was 85 degrees outside air temperature at 7,000 feet, and it kept going up. It was brutal. But the nice thing was it was ice cold with that system. So even though it's kind of brutal, these systems, they cost between, over $30,000, most of them. It
The one you
really,
put in,
they
how much
it
was the one
depends
you
on
put
the
in?
aircraft, but they're pretty expensive. There's other companies. There's companies that make electric versions. I really, really prefer the one that's direct drive compressor right off the engine, instead of going through a series of things like put in another alternator, have the alternator make electricity, have the electricity turn an electric motor, have the electric motor turn a compressor. I'm like, no, thanks. Turn the compressor, compress the Freon, let it expand and get the cold air. Like, it's that simple.
Yeah, exactly. And as far as inversions go, I think it's important to talk about flight planning just for a second. When you're looking in the summertime temps, we talked about density altitude. We don't need to beat that up. But when you're looking at keeping cool and going aloft to cool off because of these inversions, just make sure you look at the winds and temperatures aloft. Those are usually on the same chart and see what the temperatures are as you go higher. You might not want to fly as high as you think, and there may be a lower altitude that's cooler than the highest altitude you can get. And you may not be able to get as high because that density altitude as well. So I just want to tell everyone, make sure you look at the temperatures aloft when you're planning. Don't just assume it's always going to be cooler upstairs.
Don't do what Jeff did, right? Look at the
Yeah.
test. We looked at winds, we looked at weather,
Yeah.
we looked at NOTAMs. The one thing I
Yeah,
didn't
forgot
look
about
at
temperatures.
was temperatures.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, anyway, so that's my
Yeah.
shout out to AC Services and their air conditioning system, just because, and there's people who have said, hey, you should have found another aircraft or something like that. I disagree. I mean, I love my plane. A lot of people really, really love their planes. And if they have gone and made an investment in it, you got the panel the way you wanted to, you got everything working the way you wanted to, you got maintenance down to a reasonable level, sometimes it makes sense to invest in it. I will say that. And the
Yeah.
other thing, which is kind of cool about this system, is it has no restrictions. You do not have to turn it off to take off. It comes with a
There are
guide.
no operating restrictions, like you just fly it like you always do.
You fly, well,
No.
let me say, they tell you there's a very small percentage performance change when it's in, and they give you that to calculate. I believe it's a 3% difference, but I'd have to look at the guide exactly. And they tell you can leave the system on for takeoff, but add 3% to all of your numbers for calculation of distance and something like that.
So, like your fuel burn, you're going to burn 3% more fuel, or
In theory,
maybe a little bit slower if you're not
yeah.
slower.
So I experimented with this en route, and what I found, because you can turn it on and off as you go really easily, and what I found is with the compressor on versus a compressor off, it was about 2 knots, maybe sometimes it got up to three. Occasionally, it's really hard to tell when you're talking about small numbers like that.
Yeah.
But it was about 2 knots, I'd say, 2 to 3 knots, maybe. And for me, that was, oh my God, that was worth it, because it's the difference between broiling,
Yeah.
versus that. Like, who
Yeah. I
cares?
see some people saying not worth it to spend the money on air conditioning, and I'll get my flying done between 4 and 9 a.m. And I
Hey.
can see some of that. Some people don't have the choice of when to go, but I also, wonder, do you live in the south latitudes like this? Because it can be absolutely miserable. It can make the difference for me, be the difference between flying and not flying. When if I'm gonna fly in some of the hot summer temperatures we have, if there's no air conditioning, I'm not going.
Look, I am passionate about general aviation aircraft. Absolutely love them. Anything that
Yeah.
can improve them, I'm all for. I want it to be cheaper, but anything that can improve them, I'm all for. I'm not a hater on whether you should do things or not do things. There's just as many people out there that would say, don't go invest in a brand new panel, fly VFR. I mean, there's lots of things that you can say don't do, but
Well, and
this,
everybody's different,
we don't do this, right? We're not in general aviation usually because it is the cheapest way to spend time. It's not. We do it because we love it. And so
Yeah.
if you can afford a new, you know, gadget for your panel, if you can, if you want to do IFR and you can afford, or you're an IFR pilot, you fly an IMC, makes more sense to invest in a lot of those things. You know, smoke them if you got them. Like go for it. This is
Yeah,
something for
everybody has
me,
different
right?
priorities.
Yeah, for me, this was a lifelong thing. I waited forever and saved up trying to do this,
And no
and I love
regrets.
it. Yeah.
No regrets.
Oh
Yeah,
no.
that's good. Yeah,
Not
and it also,
yet.
you know, to my friends in Alaska, yeah, enjoy that now. Let's talk in February.
Yeah,
But all
anyway.
airplanes have heat, you know. They all have a good heat source.
Yes, wait, yes, exactly.
What about a
So,
turbocharged, putting it in a turbocharged version of your airplane? Would there be a different effect of that? Same performance loss?
Yeah, I think it probably would be. I don't, that's a good question. I don't know the answer. They had a whole bunch. Oh my God, they had so many planes getting done in there when I was there. But yeah, we had a bunch of people asking again. Just I think they're right. It's FTA. Their website's different name than the company, but it is AC Services in Selmer, Tennessee, Selmer. Tennessee, just wonderful, wonderful people too. Oh my God, were they good to work with? Just so kind and thorough with everything that they do. So, but you know, there's
That's
lots of
great.
different folks out there. I just like to pass along a good experience. The other thing people have pointed out is if you're going to be doing new windows, do certainly consider doing a higher level of shading. When you do, if you're going to replace windows, consider when I did the windows on the Bonanza, I made sure I put a storm window in both the pilot and the co-pilot side so that you can get more breeze on the ground.
Oh yeah, cross flow or
Yeah.
without leaving the door open.
I'll tell you one thing I have said, you mentioned leave the door open, right? Like this is something to consider because people, it's hot out, it's humid out. And people start to rush and get forgetful. And this is the season for doors popping open, right? This is the season for taxiing up to the run-up line with your door open, closing it, but not latching it correctly, or trusting a passenger to do it and not checking it. And then we saw an accident not that long ago that was a door popped open and the plane crashed. That is just,
There have
oh.
been many of those. And yeah, and on that note, if you have a door pop open, and because it is more likely to happen, you're not as likely to shut it as well or latch it as well because you're probably doing it on the go. You're clear for takeoff. All right, let's close the door. We're all guilty of that. I still do that to this day because I want that air as long as I can. And yeah, I see it in the chat. Just fly the plane. Forget the door. The airplane will fly just fine with the door open. Everybody who's ever flown with me in training gets the door popped open at some point in while they're flying, and we will see what the airplane, it flies just fine. It doesn't know much about the door. It doesn't feel, there's not a lot of aerodynamic change. It's not going to go wide open because it's in the slipstream. Now, if you, I don't know of any airplanes that have the suicide doors, you know, that open backwards like the truck do. That would be bad. I guess those would depart the airplane. Canopies are different, obviously. That could be problematic. I'm not as familiar with those, but
Well,
you know.
I used to fly a Grumman, right? And so those you could fly with open to a certain point
Yeah, because they do
only.
50 knots.
But it affects the way you fly. It causes all sorts of, a lot of stuff. So Brian, talk to us a little bit about some of the other differences in how you fly and what people should know about flying with temps going up.
Well, it's noisy and distracting if you have a door open, and that was just to fall, finish up on that. That it's tempting to try to fix the problem because you're hearing a lot of noise, and you know if you can't hear ATC and you can't hear radios. It's an emergency at that point. You do what you got to do, fly the airplane, and don't be distracted by that noise and the fact that it's louder and things are blowing around or whatever. But the different things that I do, you know, it sounds funny, but I always have a towel or paper towel. I actually take a few paper towels and shove them in the side pocket of my door because you're going to invariably sweat, and that sweat, if you have nowhere to put it, or your glasses will fog up if they go from, you know, cool to warm all of a sudden. Also, in some airplanes, if you are up in the cool temperatures and you get a cold soaked windshield, you come down into the warm, humid air, it's just like, you know, your glass of iced tea or soda on the outside will start condensating outside that cold surface. And I remember flying the Learjet, we had to carry all summer long a washcloth. Each we had one on each side because we were just having to wipe the windshield down every time because it's cold soaked. So maybe and the last thing in the world you want to do is turn on your defroster and put some heat in the airplane on top of what you've already got. So things can frost up if you're in the air up high and very cool temperatures you come down. So that's another consideration as well. Inversions, density, altitude, obviously those are all things. Tire pressures, and I think this is something you could speak to as well, that when the outside air temperature changes a lot, your tire pressures can change and you're more susceptible to a blowout. Higher true air speeds, higher rolling speeds on the tires, heat them up. I'll tell you an interesting story. The other day, we found on the airliner, one of the four wheels, one of them was just the tire pressure was, you could look at it and see that it was deflated. And we called a mechanic over and he came and looked at it and he said, it was only 100 PSI. There's supposed to be a minimum 170 to 205, I think. If it goes below 170, they have to change both tires on that side of the airplane. Because when one wasn't doing the work it's supposed to, the other one's doing extra work. And not only that, all that bending of the rubbers, like I think you mentioned on a previous episode, like where we're just bending a paperclip back and forth, and you're going to feel that heat. If we hadn't caught that, that could have been a wheel well fire right after takeoff. Suck the wheels up and put them in the wells, and we would have had a fire. A lot of critical systems in there. So I think, tire pressures and making sure that they're inflated properly is very important as well. Other than that, have the right clothes and survival gear in case you have to land somewhere. If you're flying over desert, I saw someone talking about being in Southeast Arizona and being 95 degrees. I saw that. If you have to land off airport there, you're out in the middle of nowhere and you don't, for some reason, the airplane is in a condition not to provide shade. You need to have something to give yourself some shade. Carry plenty of water, drink a lot of water, as much as your weight and balance will allow. Have the water and keep hydrated. Physiologically, keeping, if you get dehydrated, your mind isn't going to work right. You're going to be more tired, and fatigue easier. So you got to drink a lot more water. What cools the body is it sweats. That sweat evaporating, at least up in the northern latitudes. Down here, the sweat doesn't evaporate. It's just too humid. You just stay wet. But that's what cools you off is that evaporation. So you're losing a lot of water and you don't even know it. And they say 1 cup of water for every hour in the air, pretty much at altitude. You should be at minimum.
That makes a lot of sense, and I think it's a little bit of a double whammy that I've noticed affect me as my passengers and other pilots, and that is when it's really hot out, you start out in a bad place, right? You're already stressed or tired or whatever that the heat is doing to you, and then you're dealing with dehydration if you don't really force yourself to drink, but at the same time, you're trying to get to higher altitudes. And so when you combine that, the higher altitudes are drier, take longer to get there, have less oxygen. And so that in itself can have a big impact too.
I say down here, people are asking where I am. I'm in Texas. It's not as humid here as it is in many places. You go down to Mississippi, Louisiana, over to Florida, down to Miami. Not as hot there, but more humid. So yeah, that humidity, it makes a big difference in how cool you feel. I lived in St. Louis for many years before here, and that is a lot more humid than here. And that humidity just keeps you from that sweat from evaporating, so you tend to overheat faster.
And you mentioned, of course, tires. Be sure to check your tires because we're talking anytime that you got a big temperature swing happening day to day or temperatures of, the time of day, that's going to affect your tires and you need to keep them at the right temperature, at the right pressure, excuse me.
Yeah, I did hear as someone else said, I want to cover my windows, so I just file IFR. There's a problem with that statement.
I'm
And
pretty sure that's not okay.
yeah, but a lot of people don't realize the reason it's not okay, even though you're IFR talking to air traffic control. I think, and I've said this before, and most people who wa have watched my stuff probably know this, but when you're IFR, ATC will separate IFR aircraft from IFR aircraft because those are the ones that are going to be in the clouds. The IFR ones. But when you're in the clear, there's VFR aircraft out there. ATC is not responsible to separate VFR aircraft from IFR aircraft. That is a CNBC concept. So even IFR aircraft, our pilots of IFR aircraft, are required to maintain separation from VFR aircraft when they're in VFR conditions. And it specifically says that in the AIM. So there's no argument about that. But a lot of people think, I'm IFR, ATC's looking out for me. Not necessarily true. If you're in class alpha, most likely. In Bravo, yeah, they separate. I wouldn't count on it. I wouldn't bet my life on any time with air traffic control. They might be too busy, and they are human. So I never would set up a scenario where I can't see out the window at all. It's tempting to, though.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the plane itself. Because in all of these different things, the other problem that you've got is keeping the engine cool.
Yeah, I got questions about that. That's been a problem. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your, what questions do you have?
Well, first of all, there's a plate over the oil cooler, and it's like, you know, do not, you know, we put it on in the wintertime because I can't get the engine oil warm enough. And so we put this plate on there on the oil cooler, and it seems to warm up better. And then, so what's the magic temperature for putting a plate on or not? And I also have an adjustable cowl. So, you know, every season I try to do that by feel, but are there any rules or advice on adjusting those two things?
Well, certainly once you cross over into warmer temperatures, you want to get rid of anything that you've done, whether someone put tape on or put a plate on to restrict airflow, anything. You want to dump that as soon as you start getting normal temperatures. I mean, most of those are designed to be at like near zero temperatures, below, certainly below freezing, where it makes a difference. And also, it's a little less of a concern these days than it used to be. You want your oil, of course. I don't want to kind of switch over too much to winter talk, but you want your oil warm enough to boil off the moisture. That's the goal, to get hot enough for it to the moisture to turn into water vapor and to get out.
Does that mean 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100?
Yeah, but
Celsius?
It's anywhere in the engine, really. But it, and even that's a misnomer. It doesn't have to boil to get out to for it to vaporize. That's just its most efficient way of getting out of your oil at that temperature, but you're generally going to do it. But either way, we're now at a point where you have things like multi-grade, multi-weight oils, such as, you know, I'm a big fan of Phillips 66 XC20W50. That's what I use just for everything. It's been fantastic. And I use that winter and summer. And there's some really interesting stuff. One of the reasons that I'm so big on that is I've spent a lot of time with Aeroshell down at their facility with their researchers and their engineers, and with the Phillips team, with all of their engineers and everything. So I've been able to take a look at like what each of them preaches and all their testing and actually see it, check it out in person, see what's happening. And some of it is so counterintuitive to what we tell ourselves in all of general aviation with through like one mechanic to another mechanic, that it's really important to point out. One of the things that came out with Phillips testing was that the multi-grade oils, their multi-grade oils, they have a Victory and a regular one, cool better than straight weight oils do. So they've tested that. They monitored it, with they set up engines, ran engines, did the testing. And that's something a lot of people think, oh, it's summer, I'm not dealing with temperature swings, I should be using a straight weight oil. No, that's old stuff. You should be using a multi-weight oil. And personally, like I said, I use Phillips. But that does a better job at cooling and a better job at lubricating and a better job at dealing with corrosion internal to an engine. And so I recommend that to everyone. That is, first of all, the biggest thing. The second one I would throw in there is your oil level. Oil is responsible for approximately 25% of all cooling of the engine. And if you are one of these people that says, well, I try to keep it kind of on the low side so it doesn't blow off, so I don't lose much, blah, blah, blah. We don't want any wasting oil out your breather, because oil, certainly, if you fill it all the way up, some engines like to kind of spit out a certain amount of oil. But this is your heat sink. This volume of oil, as it gets pumped up through all the super hot parts of the engine and then dumped back into the pool that is your reservoir for a sump, for a wet sump engine, and then pulled from, that's your heat sink, in addition to what your oil cooler can do. And so keeping
Yeah, it's something I never thought of.
Keeping your oil level up has a massive effect on what it does to your temperatures, not just of your oil temp, but your whole engine temperatures. So
Yeah, that
anyone who's
makes
keeping it a
sense.
minimum, please don't do that.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I guess sticking with manufacturer numbers is always going to be the best bet on that. It's there for a reason, but I hadn't thought about more oil being able to cool the engine better. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
This becomes especially problematic at engines that have small oil coolers. If you fly a Cirrus, for example, with a Continental IL-550N, that has a capacity, I think it's 8 quarts. That's really big deal if you're not keeping that all the way topped up. If you have a 12 quart, like an IL-550, and you're keeping that at like, well, I fly at 10, it's 12, that's maybe not as big a difference. But the bottom line is, it's a trade-off. And so if you're in hot temperatures, really consider keeping yourself as high as your engine will tolerate, meaning that you don't just lose in the first 30 minutes of flight. Keep it up there.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Now that, of course, is
Well,
just the oil. There's a lot more to keeping engines cool, and we can talk about that too.
yeah, and as far as piloting techniques, I think it's important to, you can't just put it up at VX and climb all the way to cruise altitude. Sometimes even VY isn't good enough in my airplane. I have always taught that, especially in the summertime, once you're up at a safe altitude, and it depends on where you are as to what that number is, but out of 1,000 feet or so, lower the nose and do a cruise climb. So many advantages to that.
Oh
You can
yeah.
see better, first of all, but you get there faster. But also, it helps cool. You
Yeah.
get a faster airflow over the engine. It's going to help you cool the engine, operating at a faster indicator. Sometimes I have to climb at a higher speed to keep my engine, below a certain temperature on the days on which I should not be flying.
Right. Well, that brings up the next control that you've got, right? You've got certain things that you can control as a pilot. We talked about oil. The next thing you can control is fuel, right? And a lot of people will be so focused on what their routine is for leaning that they'll be driving engine temperatures up instead of using that fuel for cooling when it's needed.
Yeah.
We could spend days getting into like Lena Peak discussions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, fuel is something that's used to cool aircraft engines. An excessive amount of fuel when you're rich at peak and you're excessively rich at peak is used for cooling. And it does a great job
Yeah.
for that, does a great job for detonation control. Now you tend to, if you go to the Lena Peak side, well, now you're controlling temperatures by having less power, by having a non-ideal mixture, but you're not using fuel in itself for cooling, you're using power reduction for cooling. So if you find that you're having problems with that, I mean, the first thing you do when you start to see CHTs go is jam that mixture in. Use every tool you have, lower the nose, get the mixture in, do what you can so that lower power if you need to, so that you can keep that engine cool.
Yeah, that's got to stack the deck in your favor. Absolutely. At some point, what about cruising as far as you lean it out? Like my engine, I'm not going to go lean a peak and I'm not going to go nuts with looking at temperatures. It's just an O360. I lean it till it's rough and I turn it back in until it's smooth. That's
Yeah.
basically how I lean my airplane. Should I go a little richer in the summer?
Only if you need to for that cooling, but the answer is yes, you can. So you start with what you want for what's healthiest for the engine, meaning like you brought it back to where you knew you hit lean of peak by or at least one cylinder started going lean of peak when
Right.
it got rough, and then you give it that couple clicks for it to smooth out. That's fine for that engine, no question. But
Yeah.
if you're on a hot day and you need to do more climbing, or even if you're cruising, as you mentioned, and you're going along like that, and you find that your engine's warmer than you want it to be, then yeah, add fuel. Add fuel to do that. Now you have to be a little careful with all this because there's so many caveats, right? Like you're an expert, Brian, in like knowing if you fly at certain altitudes, you need to lean out so you don't lose too much power. You know, when you go over rich, you're gonna be losing power. So I'm not trying to get into all the corner cases. I'm just trying to say, don't forget oil's number one. We've got fuel number two. Then we'll talk about some other things like baffling.
Yeah. I think I took the cowl off my engine at one point and saw the baffles going the wrong way. I think, is that what, as far as the baffling between, what, tell me what you're talking about. Actually, I'm not sure.
Well, we got air-cooled engines, right? We all know that. And unless you're flying around with a Continental CD170 diesel or something, we're dealing with air-cooled engines. And the efficiency for cooling of those engines is how much of that air can you direct over the fins and then exit the aircraft. Cowl flaps have to do with how it exits, which is just as important as how it enters. But that pressure box, which is usually above an engine, there are a few engines that do it the other way, that pressure box is where you contain all that high pressurized cooling air and direct it over the fins. And that is a series of fixed or metal baffles and flexible or silicone baffles. And
so I don't know if is these orange ones the ones you're talking about?
There you go. Right there.
So why is it important that those go the right way? I've heard you mention that before.
Well, go the right way, seal properly. You know, you want to contain this, and you don't want something kind of with air escaping that compartment. And as soon as one of those little fingers or something goes the other way, then air is going to just push past it instead of being grabbed and sealed. In the way that it's facing forward in this example of this particular aircraft, the more pressure, the more it seals against the top. If it were facing the other way, it would kind of blow past it. But there's something I would encourage everyone to do with your plane. If you haven't done this, it's simple, it's easy, everyone should do it. You go and you put, prepare yourself for a darkened hangar or go out at night, whatever you want to do, and put a light underneath in the bottom of the cowl, inside the cowl, in the bottom, like a shop light, whatever, something bright. And then you look in from the inlets with the cowl closed. And this is even better if you have a borescope. You can get a cheap borescope off Amazon, do whatever you can. Get something, look in there, and you're now seeing light leaking. And those are your air leaks. Now you should only see light coming up through all the spaces in all the cooling fins of your cylinders. That should be the only place that light gets from the bottom of your cowl into the pressure compartment.
I see. So you're trying to drive the air through the cooling fins.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the biggest things that people, I think, underestimate are all the fins and baffle pieces they don't see. So for example, there are intercylinder baffles that are in between each cylinder. And because the base of the cylinder doesn't have fins, only the head usually has the real fins. And so you really need to make sure everything's in its place. I've seen so many times that those are out of place. There's a big gap, something like that. Do what you can to be able to make sure all those are sealing properly. And then a lot of times like a tube will be removed and someone will leave the hull open. There's a million ways that this can all go wrong. Arm yourself with a big old tube of RTV and get in there and see what is kind of leaking air and seal it up. And you'd be surprised that even a gap that's total volume might be the size of a quarter cumulatively can have a big impact on it, on your CHTs, on your engine temperatures.
Interesting. Wow. What does a renter do? You know, you rent an airplane. You just have to rely on all that being done properly, I guess.
Well, it's a good point. If you don't own the aircraft, there's only so much you can do, right? If hopefully you're renting it wet, because then you can
mixture.
Yeah. You can tell them, well, fuel's going to be my answer.
Full power, full rich all day long.
But no matter what you fly, right? If you rented a car and you knew it was low on oil, you'd put oil in it. You why not check it? Why not know if there's a problem and ask someone to fix it if something's going on having to do with this? I did see someone post something here. I don't know why, about Marvel Mystery Oil. Can we please be done with Marvel Mystery Oil? Done, gone, like get rid of it completely, please. Mike Bush, a good friend of mine who I do a lot of work with, he many years ago did an article on what's in that stuff, and it's like perfume and pig fat and kerosene and like no.
Yeah. Oh, but it's so much cheaper.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the
Anyway,
thing.
so baffling. Go check that out. That's once you know when you look at it, you can control baffling, you can control oil, you can control fuel, amount of fuel, and as you mentioned, most important thing, you can control the way you fly. And I want to bring up another point to ask you about. There's a big difference between starting a flight after a quick turn, like fueling up on a hot day, and starting a flight with a cold engine that you maybe just warm up just enough. Do you plan your flights any differently with that? Meaning, like, you know, you're taking off with a hot engine?
No, I've never
No.
given any thought. I'll be honest, I haven't given thought to that. No, I haven't.
I think that should be part of the pre-flight process. If you've just
Okay,
come in
so I
on a
landed for
hot
fuel
day,
and I'm taking off again.
yeah, you just landed with hot cylinders, right?
Yeah.
We're not talking 100 degree cylinders, we're talking 350 degree cylinders or more. You just landed that way. Your oil is all hot. It's already been up there. Everything's been working to cool off as much as possible.
I
And
mean,
all
hot
you
starting a
do.
fuel injected oil engine is something I've thought about.
Okay,
That's definitely
we
a
could talk
thing,
about
but
that too. But in the cooling side, I think as a pilot, you should be prepared as you go down that runway and you rotate and you begin your climb, that your eyes should be on your temps. Because this is going to be a lot different than that first takeoff of the day in what you see.
interesting. I didn't think it would be that much different, but I suppose it would be. What is a temperature that should concern you? EGT,
Well,
CHT, which one is more important? And like, what would be the max number? What would concern you enough to power back?
it's sort of all of the above. I'm not saying like, well, your red lines are what power you back. So if you're talking about CHTs, I know that there are different limits, of course, between Lycoming and Continental. I'm not even going to go into that because my red line is 400, period. You can say you can run cylinders hotter than that without any consequences based on what the manufacturers say. Mine, 400. I do not let my cylinders get over 400. I don't care what kind of plane I'm flying. And oil temps are a little bit different. They can get a little bit higher. But the point is more about realizing that you've got another factor there. Because if you just warmed up your oil to 100 degrees, because that's sort of like where your green line starts, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and your cylinders are just starting to warm up, and you've gone through your pre-flight check, even though it's a really hot day, that takeoff, you've got this big buffer before you can expect high temp issues where you're really worried about your CHTs. You're probably not worried about your CHTs in the first 100 feet, right? It's later as you start climbing, you're going to be like, oh, I better start watching this. If you just landed with a hot engine, I think you've got to start worrying about that as soon as you rotate. Keep looking. Keep it part of your scan.
That's a good point. And I mean, if you have to power back, if you have to go back and land, stop your climb, maybe level off intermittently.
Yeah.
Step climbing is a thing. For keeping an engine cool too, that's something that I've also done as well.
You know, the other thing you mentioned about vapor lock, it's not, we can talk about hot starting and hot starting, especially fuel injected engines.
Yeah.
However, keep in mind on a hot day that the same or similar, I'll say, issues occur between your tanks. So if you've been going off one tank, you just landed, you just fueled up and everything's hot and you're on the left tank. The chances that when you go to the right tank in cruise now on a hot day that you could get a burble of some kind out of that are higher than they would have been on a low a day when you have to worry less about the fuel vaporizing.
Say that one more time. I want to make sure I
Okay,
follow
so we always worry about a little bit of vapor, and I'm not talking about, so vapor lock's one thing, that's different.
that.
But I'm talking about, you always worry when you switch tanks, is there some type of a gap there before the fuel is flowing properly? That is more of a risk in a regular avgas engine on a hot day than it is going to be on a cold day.
I never even thought of that, of an air gap due to vapor, like vapor in that fuel line.
Yes. Yeah,
Have,
it's
you
not
know, I've never
it,
experienced that I
well,
know of.
you what happens is you get little small gaps that can there that can form, and then it's just the fact that at a low temperature, that's a small air bubble. That's a larger bubble. I'm not talking you're not usually going to have a problem. It's going to
I
be a
got you.
burble, but you're going to notice it. It's different than vapor lock.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the other thing, which I've talked with Kurt Hartwig, for anyone who's got fuel cells or fuel bladders in their plane, is that higher temps, you're going to deal with a lot more concerns. If you don't keep your bladders full, then that vapor is drying out those tanks and eating the life of those tanks also. So keep your tanks full.
Yeah, that makes sense. I try to do that all the time. Especially in a humid environment where it cools at night, you've got air in your tank, then you're going to get some condensation, then it warms up, and that water gets to the bottom of your, you know, what's not getting all over everything else is getting to the bottom of your fuel. And hopefully you sump it out, but why give it the opportunity?
Vapor is the enemy of fuel bladders, period. It dries it out. It goes through a cycle of swelling versus cracking. Vapor is the enemy. Keep your tanks as full as you can, which again has to be balanced with it's hot and you have to worry about your weight and balance. Tough,
And there
tough,
are
tough
some,
questions.
it is. And I remember there was a time, interesting, just a little factoid. It has nothing to do with, what any of us are going to do, or unless you're flying corporate jets. But I know that there was a time we were really trying to stretch the range of a Gulfstream flying from the Middle East back to the United States. And we were actually planning our fuel stops based on where they kept the fuel, whether they kept it in the ground or in a truck. Because if they kept it in a truck, it's going to be warmer and we're not going to get as much fuel because the fuel is bigger when it's warmer, if you think of it that way. And in the ground, the fuel is a lot cooler. So we can actually see more and more jet places like the airliners. We get it, it's all coming out of the ground. It's stored down there and kept cool because you can compress it. So the fuel is like compressed and you actually get a lot more fuel. So many gallons is like more weight at when it's cooler. So cooler fuel, you can actually get more into the tank and get a, increase your range. If you, and we're talking about a high performance airplane that can actually go really far with big enough tanks that makes a difference.
Well, that's a really good point, right? Because if you fuel up in the morning, the one thing you don't want to do with a plane, right, is go and take gas right in the morning, and then you're not going to fly until the afternoon. So you top off your tanks on a really hot day. What's going to happen when you come back? You're going to have
It's
big
dripping.
puddles of dollar bills all over the place that you paid for and contributed to the, deterioration of your ramp.
And a lot of people I know will, leave it an inch or two down when they're fueling it up and it's going to sit out in the sun for a while. So you're not just dumping it all out. But it
And I
seems
know.
like forever that mine will be leaking out of the fuel vent. I'll be a half hour into a flight and it's still coming out of there because it's probably still heating and expanding.
Probably. Or you have a check valve issue. But yeah, we get some people ask about if you have metal tanks, then it's still, yes, you should keep things full because of what Brian mentioned about the condensation issue. The fact that any vapor area, any empty part of your tank, as you go through temperature changes at night and during the day, that's a good way to get moisture into your fuel.
So if I have my fuel's too warm and I want to cool it off, I'll just throw some ice in the tank. Just like my soda,
There you go.
It gets really cool.
Yes,
Don't
yes,
do
yes.
that. It's
Yeah.
a little joke.
I didn't say that. Brian said that. The
Yeah.
last thing you mentioned, of course, was hot starts, which is something most people don't have to worry about. If you've got like a basic, Lycoming or your carbureted engine, not as much of an issue. But for those people with fuel injected engines, that can become more of an issue. And There are lots of techniques. Check with your forums for how people do stuff. But there's also a surprising amount of bad information out there.
There are a lot of pilots have like the perfect way. It's amazing how many of the perfect way to start to hot start a fuel injected engine there are. It's hilarious to me.
Yes. Like yeah, there's, and I've got my own. I'm not going to lie. I've got my own. I go and basically crank it and start, you know, tickling the fuel pump, and it works every single time. But other
and every airplane's got its own personality with hot starts too, and yours may be different than another one.
True. There's also a little inside baseball for everybody here. There's also bad information that goes all the way into POHs, into the pilot operating handbooks. This exists. So here's a little quick story from an engineer who was part of development. I will tell you that it's interesting on Bonanzas, on IO 550 situations. For those, for example, you have the ability to have your throttle and your mixer out and run the pump, and it will cycle cooler fuel through parts of the system, not all of it, but parts of the system, which helps, you know, in theory, cool that down, and you don't have as many issues. You're sort of pre-cooling the mechanical fuel pump area and things like that, and part of the throttle body. Doesn't always work all the time, but it has some effect. There's that. What happened, which is interesting for all the Cirrus folks, is when they certified the Cirrus, they took the same instructions and just used it from the Beechcraft side.
Without the same technology under the hood?
Well, it turns out that on the IO550N that's used in the Cirruses, there's no return line.
Oh my gosh. Today they're still doing that?
Yes, it's still there. It's still in the manual. Okay. So the procedure is not going to hurt anything.
No, but I've done that procedure in a Cirrus and it works.
Oh, well, good for you.
Funny enough. But maybe it didn't even need to be done. Maybe
I am not saying that hot starts are not difficult in a Cirrus. They are just as difficult as in many other things. But one of the reasons that they are difficult is there is no return line. You can go look at it. It goes one way. There's no return line. You're not circulating.
Is it going to spill on the ramp when it's flooded?
No,
is
that... no, it's just going one way and it's getting blocked. And so you're listening to it, but it's not doing, it wasn't designed for that. And they just copied the same POH material. So,
yeah. I mean, I've heard also you just flood the piss out of the engine until you hear it dripping on the ramp and then you've purged it enough. Of course, have a fire extinguisher nearby, you know.
And what happens when you hear that pop or someone says there's fire? You keep cranking.
Yeah, keep cranking. Yeah, definitely.
Keep cranking. Oh, man. Any other tips of yours that when you go out there? Because I'll be back out there with you shortly. What are we going to be doing on a hot day?
We're going to be inside the house watching baseball game or something like that, you know, in the air conditioning. We'll be or flying your airplane.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. Well, I will say one last thing on a hot day for everybody out there. Resist the temptation to decide that you are going to wash, wax, detail, buff your plane in direct sunlight. Please, though, every bottle, everything that's out there says don't do that. It's true. Don't do that. Get fine shade, borrow shade, move under a tree, do whatever you got to do. You can really bake some stuff on there that's a lot. It's pretty hard to buff off and wind up with marks you didn't want to have on your plane. So be careful. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah, that's fair advice.
Tickle throttle. I said tickle the fuel pump. A little switch. zip it on just enough to get that going.
Right. Sometimes you tickle the throttle. Sometimes when you're starting a Cessna, you got to, I won't say what I say, but you got to.
Tickle a co-pilot.
Everybody's got a way to start these engines, and sometimes they have their own personality, which just cracks me up that now with car engines, I can take my phone and I can do the app from away. It's going to start. But I remember before we had all these electronic fuel injection that, you know, with a carbureted engine, they all have their own personality. How many pumps does it take? And when it doesn't start, when you smell the gas, stop pumping. You know, there's just so many different ways. How long do I run it? Oh, I do have one more serious piece of advice. Mind starter limits. And I think you would agree with me on this. Mm. That is a big deal that I have seen people in a hot temperature with getting a hot start situation, they're cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kill their starter. Talk about that real quick, and then we'll say goodbye.
Excellent, excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up. The best thing that you can do if you're having trouble starting your plane after a reasonable short cranking cycle is to take a break.
Just go have a
Take
beer
a
and then come
break.
back and then try. I'm kidding.
Forget what Brian just said.
Go have a
Take a
soda.
break. Go to the bathroom one more time. Talk to your friends. Open up the cowl. Let things cool down. Do whatever you got to do. Do not the These things are not meant to be used that way. Starters are not meant to be used where they're going for, a minute or more at a time. And that's not just true of the starter. It's actually true of the contactor, right? The solenoid that's in here. If you've ever had to replace one of these, the solenoids, they have one that's called constant duty, that is for your master, and one that's literally labeled intermittent duty, and that is for your starter. You don't want to be using these things, for that period of time. So,
Yeah, mind your POH. Usually the limitations are published in there and they're there for a reason. And also get your engine manual too.
makes sense. Absolutely. Well, Brian, we've come to another end of an hour of
Oh my gosh, I thought we
Cockpit
just started. Oh my gosh, and all three people who joined us tonight, they stayed with us this whole time. I can't believe it.
Well, we're grateful to all of you for taking time out of your evening to join us here. I will tell you what's coming up. Tuesday, June 12th, I know I'll be on. That is the Shift Show, Brian. 8 p.m. Eastern Time, if I get that
Thursday?
correct.
I think you said
Thursday.
Tuesday. Thursday. Yeah, 2 nights from now. Yeah, the
Tuesday from
shift
now.
show.
Thursday, sorry. Thursday, June 12th, 2 nights from now. What are you going to be talking about on the Shift Show?
We're going to be talking about thinking right for a safe flight, what the mindset of a safe pilot is, and some very astonishing things that we've learned about those who crash airplanes. I'm going to be joined by Aaron Dabney, fellow member of the board of NAFI, and also he's got a flight school down in Waco, Texas. And we're going to be talking about the human, the softer side, the mushy stuff, but it's the stuff that's killing pilots. Very important. So join us Thursday night at 7 p.m. Central, theshiftshow.tv.
I will absolutely be there, and I want to invite everybody to our next Social Flight Live show because it's going to be really important. Tuesday, June 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So that's the following Tuesday, next Tuesday. Ken Lux is going to be on, and he is CEO of an organization called Flights to Freedom. I met him recently, and it had a massive impact on me. This is an organization that uses general aviation to save human trafficking victims. And I am
Wow.
telling you need to watch this show because you can help. There, this, you know, we hear these, we know all about this, right? Fly to help save pets, fly to take medical flights, to help people get to their medical flights and things like that. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a sneak peek right now to this, that this is critical, and it is something general aviation can do that no one else can do. When they rescue someone from human trafficking, these are often children have been taken advantage of by sexual predators and and all sorts of things. They need to get these kids to safety immediately, and they cannot use regular transportation. They don't have documents. They've had their passports taken from them. They don't have documents. They can't get in on an airliner. They need to do
Oh,
things quickly. Often ground transportation isn't quick enough. And we, all of us, can help because we can just get them in a plane, doesn't matter what their papers are, and just get them to safety.
well, I'm going to encourage everybody to watch that because I've had a human trafficking event on one of my airline flights. And thanks to the observations of a very astute and professional flight crew in the back, we did everything we were supposed to do, and we performed a save that night. This child was going to be never seen again, this poor young gal. And as it turns out, we performed a save because we did what we knew we were supposed to do. We're trained on it. We followed through on it. And that is a topic that should be near and dear to every human's heart. Please watch that show.
So again, Tuesday, June 17th, please join us for that. If you can't help yourself, I guarantee there's going to be someone else that you can help. as part of it. So really, really important. And their organization is called Flights to Freedom. Also, that show will be sponsored by Avemco. And if you mention Social Flight to Avemco, you save 5%. So be sure to thank them as well. And then, well, Brian, again, thank you so much. I learned so much from you, man.
Well, likewise. I love our conversations as always. I look forward to doing it again next month.
You got it. So right, to everyone who joined us this evening, thank you so much. And from my side, I just say thank you, and I wish you all blue skies.
All right, everybody. Have a good night. And remember, there's two speeds, slow and screw up. Go slow. Have a good night.